The challenges we face are many. As is obvious, in such a limited time, we can never hope to do justice to Islam, nor any other faith for that matter. What we can do is provide information that can lead to a basic appreciation of Islam as a faith that has endured, prospered, and informed the lives of many, past and present. It is hoped that this discussion will motivate all who are interested to continue to study and learn in the future, to look to the bibliography that we've provided with the course and the materials. The study of Islam today, and this is a major problem that we face, the study of Islam today is motivated by and cannot escape the threat that radical Islam, that Muslim extremists and terrorists have posed to their own societies and to the West. It's easy for many of us to forget that significant interest in and awareness of Islam in recent decades was not driven by recognition that Islam was the second largest and perhaps fastest growing of the world's religions. Most people weren't even aware of that. But by the challenge and threat of the Iranian Revolution and the impact of what is called political Islam, or more popularly called Islamic fundamentalism. Too often we've seen Islam, the religion of the majority of Muslims, through the lens of terrorism, the actions of a deadly minority. Now, we don't do that with other faiths, and I'll talk about that in a short time. This problem is compounded by and is especially true post-September 11th in the context of the war against global terrorism, and in particular, Al-Qaeda. Thus, appreciation of the faith of the vast majority of Muslims has often been obscured by the tendency to view Islam and equate it with radical or revolutionary movements, their use of violence and terrorism. We don't do this when we encounter the acts of violence and terror committed by Christians or Jews. From Northern Ireland and Serbia, to those who blow up abortion clinics, or the extremist who killed Israel's Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, or Dr. Baruch Goldstein who slaughtered Muslims at prayer in the Hebron Mosque in the 1990s. The majority of us have been raised in a Judeo-Christian culture or society, and we are or know many Jews and Christians. We immediately and instinctively contextualize these acts as the acts of extremists, as aberrations, not representative of the mainstream. Even when we use the word extremist, we mean extreme as compared to the mainstream, as compared to mainstream Judaism and Christianity. We do not have a similar knowledge and experience of Islam and Muslims. And indeed, when we talk about extremist Muslims, it's not as if we instinctively then use the term as extreme as compared to what? As compared to what norm? It's hard for most of us to remember that until the late 1970s, with the Iranian Revolution and the Soviet-Afghan War, Islam and Muslims were invisible, neither a part of our cognitive nor our geographic landscapes. I can vividly recall the reaction of friends and family when they learned that I intended to major in Islamic studies in the late 1960s. You'll never get a job. Why are you studying that abracadabra field? Having studied and taught Christian theology, and in the midst of graduate courses in Hinduism and Buddhism, my decision to study Islam seemed inexplicable. And indeed, I was actually against doing it. What I knew of Arabs and Muslims, basically through a few movies or media, made me think, why would I want to study it? I had to be pressured by the then chair of the religion department at Temple University. However, once I began to study Islam, I discovered a religious tradition with close affinities to Judaism and Christianity, with a rich religious, historical, and civilizational legacy that I had never been told about in school, in high school, and university. For example, while all Muslims believe in God, the Quran, and the teachings of Muhammad, there is a rich diversity of interpretation and cultural practices. I knew neither about Islam, nor did I know about this richness of cultural practices. And indeed, that's true for many people today. They see the acts, it's like when you engage a new ethnic group. You know, if you meet one Italian and he tends to move his hands a lot and seems emotional, and the only Italian you know, you think, well, all Italians are that way. Well, for many, the few Muslims that they see, the few actions, if they just discovered Islam during the Iranian Revolution and saw people shouting every day, death to America in the streets, the presumption was that these people represented all Muslims. Let's clarify several basic terms as we begin this course. Like Hebrew, Arabic has a consonant-based root system. The Arabic root SLM, from which the word Islam is derived, means submission and peace. It yields three important terms among many: Islam, Muslim, and Salam. Thus, the word Islam literally means submission to God and peace, the peace that comes from following God's will, both to individuals and to a society. A Muslim is one who submits, one who seeks to actualize or realize God's will in history, both as an individual and as a member of a worldwide faith community. Finally, Salam, whose root is similar to that of the Hebrew Shalom, or peace, is the common greeting that Muslims engage in. Salam alaikum. Peace be with you.